This song says, stand up, you freedom fighters. Don't be afraid. Angola is our country given to us by God. And it was left in our hands by our ancestors. We shall keep on fighting until the end. We will never end unless we reach total victory. The Angolan revolution will never end, I say, until we reach total victory.
The singers, children. Children whose ages range between 4 and 9 years, attending a school outside Kinshasa. The song is not a nursery rhyme, sung by ordinary school children leading an ordinary life. Those are children who, even at their tender age, have known fear and hatred, and many of them have seen death. They are the children of freedom fighters of Angola, living as refugees in the Congo. Many of them have lost their fathers in the war, and some of them are orphans. Their school is not ordinary either. There are no buildings except for the assembly hall, which is a small hut they built themselves under a big tree, hardly large enough to shield them from the sun or rain. They have only one teacher, himself a teenage orphan, taking charge of 4 classes of 40 children each.
United Nations Radio presents Towards Liberation, a series of 4 programs on the liberation movements in Africa. Program 2 is entitled The Struggle.
To the outside world, the fight for freedom in Africa is only recent, having started with the wind of change about a decade ago. But to the liberation movements, from Angola to Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau, Namibia and South Africa, it is something that has been going on from the day that the first settlers set foot on African soil. In the case of Portuguese colonies, Paul José Gumane, president of the Revolutionary Committee of Mozambique, COREMO, explains.
This, of course, goes back to the 18th century, when our people were made slaves. And after the abolition of slaves, the Portuguese decided to change the word of slavery into another name, which is service contratado, and this, of course, is part of slavery, because up to now our people are obliged by force to work for the big industrialists in the government department establishments. Most of our African people who work there are badly paid or are not paid at all. So this, of course, is still part of the slavery, and this has been going on up now. And we have never, even when you might have heard about the reforms in the Portuguese colonies, this has never taken place. Our people are now suffering more than before, because the Portuguese retaliation has no choice.
In South Africa, the history of the struggle has also been a history of fight against robbery. Robbery of African manpower, its mineral and agricultural resources, and its land. The 3 dynamic issues over which the struggle for the future is being fought out.
The history of the liberation struggle of the African people in Southern Africa is a history stretching over centuries of resistance against foreign occupation and aggression by white colonialists. Insofar as our country is concerned, it will be recalled that in April of 1652, a company of Dutch settlers settled at the Cape. From this period on, we have witnessed a determined struggle of the people fighting against these invaders who decided to go inward all the time, plundering and robbing and stealing the country from its indigenous owners.
And from Zimbabwe, the liberation movements of that country also recall how the struggle started.
Yes. The history of the liberation movement in Zimbabwe is not a recent one. It goes back to the time when the white settlers came in. That was in 1890. And they were resisted by our forefathers through a resistance war, which at that time went under the name of Chimurenga. Incidentally, our liberation struggle today is similarly named. In 1893, the first rebellion in Zimbabwe against foreign occupation broke out. That was the so-called Matabele Rebellion. And then 3 years later, the Mashona Rebellion took place, and it lasted for a whole year. The people of Zimbabwe were defeated, at least temporarily, by the sheer supremacy of weaponry. But that struggle, which was started almost 75 years ago, is the kind of struggle we are still carrying out. We are continuing from where our parents, our forefathers left.
But the liberation movements point out, however, that when organized resistance started in their countries, the emphasis was on non-violence. A representative of the Southwest African organization, SWAPO, explains the methods used then.
We believed that we could achieve independence without resorting to violence. And to this end, the methods that we used included petitions to the government for grievances to be alleviated, and petitions also to the United Nations. We also sent some delegations to the South African government itself to complain about certain things, and especially on the question of racial discrimination and the denial of our rights. And these were, of course, basically denied. Another form of fighting against the racist was protest demonstrations. And in this respect, we used to organize demonstrations and boycotts of various governmental institutions.
The liberation movements maintain that the policy of nonviolence was pursued right up to about 1949 in several countries, when realization was brought home, they say, that the minority regimes would not be overthrown by peaceful means, and when it was no longer possible to plead to the conscience of the white man in their countries, precisely because he does not believe in those things himself.
Now, the people of South Africa are struggling for liberation, and they have undergone a period of more than 40 years and found that they were not getting anywhere. In fact, the laws were becoming stricter. Whatever little rights that they had in the past were being deprived. Fascism was taking a strong hold. South Africa was fast becoming a police state then. It is a fully-fledged police state today. And the people decided that there must be some positive action against the ruling class, and that the method of non-violence was always met with violence from the other side, and that one cannot use non-violence as a means of struggle when you have reactionary violence as the answer on the other side.
That point of argument is also shared by many individuals outside South Africa who are directly or indirectly involved in movements which oppose that country's racial policies. One of them, Bishop Reeve, who was the Bishop of Johannesburg at the time of the Sharpeville massacre, is now president of the anti-apartheid movement based in London. The bishop explains how the struggle is seen from both sides in South Africa.
Having tried every peaceful method open to them to secure change, without avail, the African leadership decided that violence was the only alternative left to them. The fact is that for the first time, both sides in the racial struggle in South Africa are now committed to violence. The white minority to preserve the status quo, and the non-white majority to change. Change from a society dominated by apartheid to one that is non-racial in character.
So there you have two strong opposing forces, each more and more determined to fight for its cause. The white minority in all southern African countries still under foreign rule are enjoying a standard of living said to be four times higher than anywhere else in Western Europe. In order to maintain the status quo, they resort to harsher and harsher methods to suppress the demands of the majority, so much so that the liberation movements are forced to resort to underground operations and to establish headquarters outside their countries. The chief representative of one of the two movements in Zimbabwe explains this point.
The African has no way of expressing his views politically. If you express your views, you're called a terrorist. If you express, you're called a communist. Now, given this situation, given this framework, where you are not allowed to express your own views, where you must only express the things that are required by the regime, you find it difficult to operate under those circumstances. It is for this reason that we have to operate from outside, because the system is such that you can't work from within the country.
The freedom fighters did not find it easy. In fact, they found it was more difficult to operate from outside. For one thing, their influx into neighboring countries created a major refugee problem. Consequently, the refugee population in the countries from which the freedom fighters operate has more than doubled in the past 5 years, with Zambia, Tanzania, and Congo-Kinshasa taking the largest shares. The moment they got out of the country, they were immediately faced with two major problems. 1. Organizing propaganda campaigns to educate their fellow compatriots they left behind.
The first step was to educate people politically, to give them more courage to try to organize them on a village level before we reach the city level.
The voice of a young representative of the revolutionary government of Angola in exile, one of the two major liberation movements of Angola with its headquarters in Kinshasa. The second problem was that of rehabilitation. With the outbreak of the fighting, there was a constant exodus of refugees from the combat areas to the neighboring independent countries, many of them women and children.
With Portuguese bombings of the villages and towns, so many refugees ran away in the Congo, in Zambia. It was the responsibility of the leadership of the party to take care of the lives of these women, old men and children. We have to take care of the legal status within the countries where they live as refugees. We have to take care of the sanitation condition, the health, the school for the children. Then, of course, internationally, the government also has the responsibility of presenting the case before public opinion at the United Nations, at the Organization of African Unity.
The refugee children are fighting no less a war than that which their fathers are engaged in the combat zones. They were born in difficulty, and they live in difficulty. They have no proper school facilities. The few organized schools in the refugee areas are all jammed up. A classroom which would normally hold no more than a dozen children accommodates more than 40. They have to make their own blackboards, desks, and chairs from discarded timber from anywhere they can pick. There are no proper hospitals. Where there are dispensaries, there are very few, if any, experienced medical staff. In one hospital, a qualified doctor, with the assistance of only 3 trained nurses, has to treat over 500 cases a day, from the wounded combatants to children with malaria and women giving birth, and performing at least 6 major operations in his makeshift operation room. Those children are sending a direct plea, crying out loud for help, pleading to the world to help them be free. Underneath the courage they show while singing, "We shall keep on fighting until the end," there is fear and a louder cry of anguish saying, "Pray you use your freedom, and so far, if you please, allow me mine."
That was program number 2 in the series Towards Liberation, a series of 4 programs on the liberation movements in Africa. This program was produced by the international staff of United Nations Radio in New York.